Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Timefall.
And Josh Brown.
Hiya.
Finding all of us on the beach because we are the three people in the office who have finished Death Stranding. I think Benji just has as well, but he's not within the vicinity. So we're going to crack on anyway. This is a full-on Death Stranding spoiler cast. Oh dear God, every single thing is up for grabs. And if you're listening to this, I'm going to assume that you finished it as well. Or you just want to know what the hell's going on in Hideo Kojima's latest masterpiece. So, without further ado, let's get into the biggest stuff, the ending. One of the biggest reveals is that Amelie is actually an extinction entity.
And kind of not even real,
yeah,
you know?
It turns out she wasn't real for the whole game. So, yeah, what did you guys think of that stuff to just sort of kick things
Can
off?
Can I just say, like, I've seen the trailer straight away when I see in bed dying and Amelie, I'm just like, you're the same person, aren't you? Like,
really?
The facial structure, you can just look at, like, are you the same person? I think I said it straight away. She didn't want to say it anymore. Just be like, oh, I don't know. Is this a thing? And it's, well, like, it, when it happened, I was like, oh!
It's really weird because on that opening scene, like, obviously, yeah, one of the twists is, like, we're going to talk with an assumed level of knowledge,
yes,
for audience members. Audience members? Listeners is the word I want. Viewers as well, if you're on YouTube. Because at the very beginning, when it says that the same actress plays both people, when they introduce Bridget, it's the same person. So I was, yeah, like, okay, I get that. And I just kind of just assumed that, like, her name must be Amelie Bridget, whatever. And I just went with that for the whole time. So, like, that thing didn't blow me away too much. But, Jimmy, you're making a face.
What blew me away, right? And this is entirely me. I know it has a different meaning. But Amelie, if you break that down and you turn it into Geordie speak,
right,
it means I'm a lie.
Good.
A lie. I'm, yeah, not a real.
But they even do that by breaking down, like, the French, yeah, word for it. Like, that's yeah, another thing. Like, I've got a whole separate point for the level of script writing, let's say, and some of the stuff like Princess Peach, mm-hmm, and the, you know, oh, I'm Mario and you're Princess Peach. That stuff was the stuff where I really started going, like, okay, like, you've lost me. But I know when I messaged you guys saying, like, what the living hell is this game? Or is this scene, rather?
It's like 3 hours before the end as well.
Yeah, yeah. Which, that's, someone needs to just get in touch with Big Hideo, you know, Big Bad Cod, and just tell him, look, credits come at the end, all right? Don't do the credits if you've got another 3 hours.
When I got to that first credit scene, when you're just waiting, I was waiting for one of you to eventually get there and message going, what, do you just wait here? Are you just meant to run until Sam decides to sit down?
Yeah, and then even when you figure that out, that you just have to, yeah, run and sit and get some plot, you do that another 7 times?
Yeah, Benroy, I'm going to tell you something that I haven't taught you in real life because I've been saving it for this podcast, but when I got to that moment where you sit down and the credits roll, I thought that was the end, obviously. So I messaged you saying, you know, I've finished, and you messaged me back saying, no, oh, yeah, it's proper guttering when you have to take Lou to the incinerator. And I thought,
oh, no.
I am not. I'm gonna
spoiler. Roy strikes again.
Out the window.
That's a thing. So okay, Mr. Benoit's gone bright red. Red Roy. I think it is. That's one of the things, though, that comes with the way that ending is paced. Because, you know, maybe if you saw, like, you know, your Metal Gears, you know that he tends to do stuff post credits. He tends to sort of elongate things out. This is the most elongated, I feel, for, like, an ending sequence in terms of the pacing of it, and the fact that across all of Death Stranding, one of the things that I loved was, you know, you're building America, you're coming together, and, like, where's it all going to lead and whatever. But he pretty much wrote, like, what could be a through-line Metal Gear-style linear narrative and then just injected a massive chunk of open world in the middle, which means that the end is kind of, it's like a game of two halves with this middle open world stuff. And at the end, like, you know, from about episode 6, like 7-ish onwards, that's when it all becomes very cutscene heavy. And yeah. Like, I think there's a very noticeable thing where, for me, I don't think Kojima's adapted to open world storytelling very well.
It feels very fragmented, I feel. Yeah. I like the story. I really love where it goes. I thought it was really emotional, but it does feel like a game of two hearts.
Mm-hmm. Towards the end, full Metal Gear, especially with the Cliff Dunga stuff and Die Hard Man. I was like, one,
you
they're either going to be
John McClane, sir.
Yeah. They're either going to be best friends on the battlefield or they're going to be lovers. Because at one point, when you're BB inside the pod, are they gonna kiss?
Yeah.
There's goos in my way.
But when it comes to like Cliff Unger, I knew the game couldn't have been finishing when I thought it was going to, because he'd barely even been introduced. Like, it felt like the game was wrapping up, and yet we'd barely been introduced to who this guy is and what he means. And then there was another 2 or 3 hours of cutscenes involving him.
You can tell by Kojima's social feeds that he spent months with Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah,
so
true.
It wasn't going to be just 2 or 3 scenes.
Plus, even in the trailers, like the amount, that's a separate point, but the amount of stuff that was in the trailers that I think that they pulled from scenes that are literally 30, 40 hours into the game, things like Hartman's introduction that they put out ahead of time as a character introduction, that, you know, are things that, and Mama as well, like one of her biggest reveals in game is that her baby isn't real, sorry, is dead or whatever, that you don't know that until you meet her in the game, but we all knew going in because it was her character trailer.
And my favorite trailer from the game, the Del Toro stuff, where he goes to the sewer part and then the baby floats towards Mads and then like, he comes out of the water. That was my favorite trailer. It's like, oh wait, this is just in the game, isn't it? And
then
I said to JB just beforehand, I was like, I think I'm going to get to a point with one of the trailers are in it, and I didn't know that was actually going to be in the game.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that was weirdest in terms of the trailer stuff is that like the shot of him being all blue with the gun to his head, that is nigh on the final shot of the game.
Yeah.
Like until it restarts again. But like it's one of the endings. And so like, because there's an interview clip that you can read about these like weird grubs that turn blue when they're dead or whatever. This thing that Kojima clearly just read on Wikipedia once and went, well, that'd be kind of cool. Because the thing he does loads of is a random character will just talk to you normally and say, hey, thanks for the donuts or whatever it is. Thanks for the pizza. But anyway, I was reading this thing and like there's this ancient Egyptian tradition and turns out that it's about the grubs and they go blue. Isn't that funny? And then that factors massively into the whole thing.
Yeah, but Higgs is a pharaoh though, isn't it?
Well, I guess the whole thing with Higgs being chaos and everything kind of, yeah, ties into some weird like, I don't know, hierarchical domination thing.
Yeah.
But in terms of like, the trailer influence on the storytelling, that was in the back of my mind a lot, where I was like, well, I haven't had this scene yet and I haven't had this scene yet. Like even the World War II stuff doesn't really come in until 20, 25 hours.
Maybe even more.
Maybe more, which is kind of nuts. I guess in terms of wrapping up thoughts on the ending, we were all positive ultimately in the end. Yes. It lost me completely after the Higgs fight, to the point where me and my wife were just going like, what's going on? Like literally, it's madness. The bit when the slow motion run on the beach, the Mario and Peach stuff.
I was expecting that reaction when you got to the beach, like, and I had that thing was like, well, we come to near the end of the game, and I'm just like, oh, come on, Scott, just please make it. You know, it gets good again. I mean, it gets good after all, blah, blah, blah. But it's like that brought me down as well. But luckily, like, if you play these sort of games, they're designed to have a glass of wine just there so you can sit and sit.
So you can be hammered off your face.
And just walk back with waiting for it to happen.
I think that in that case, it's one of those times where I, for the longest time, don't think that Kojima needs an editor. Right? And I used to always say that. I think that he was, because just in terms of a creative force, I like that he's unrestrained. And there's one word that describes Death Stranding. It is unrestrained. He hasn't held a single thing back. Pee grenades and everything else. But in that scene, I was kind of like, I kind of wish that someone had kind of reined him in a little bit. Like, it's weird. The more I've gone back over Metal Gear and the more I've looked into the production credits and the more I've looked at things like the translator for the very first game, the more I realized that his quote-unquote genius was reined in and focused. And when he's been completely off the leash, Phantom Pain and now Death Stranding, it's nuts in a maybe bad way.
I do like that every chapter is kind of like focused on a character in some way. But yeah, it feels like the ending was fine, but we just had too much game before then.
Right.
And like the whole traveling all the way back across America.
I knew that was coming. That was something I called from the very beginning. I was like, as soon as you've mapped America, you're going to go back again.
If you were like, I don't know, how many roads did you build? Because if you like, I know you built more roads than me. I just went to the nearest road. I could, screw it. I'm getting on that and going.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was obviously what they want to go for. Like at that point, like, you're at the very end, and like I had a whole network of ziplines set up that like I'd done, but a few other players had done. So when it came part to do that, I just ziplined all the way back through the country, which is like obviously one of those meta narrative things where he wants you to fall back on like your established routes that you're comfortable with, which is the overall message of the game, like relying on other people and stuff like that. That's just some of the best stuff in terms of like a thematic kind of thing. But I guess, Josh, where did you come down overall on the end? ending. I think you really liked all that.
I really liked the ending. I agree that the stuff on the beach just after you fight Higgs is absolutely daft. And when he was talking about, even when he was talking about like the Doomsday and Princess Beach, all that stuff, I was just sort of, I wasn't disappointed because it felt very Kojima, but I felt like it was at odds with what at least the central narrative had established before then. And I do think it picks up after that for the next 2 or 3 hours or whatever and brings all that stuff to a satisfying conclusion. But I don't know why that was kept there. It feels like it's something more for the players than it is for the story. And I don't think it serves the characters very well.
Did you both go up to her and hold on, grab her, by the way? Because, you know, you get that when Amelie's walking off into the water.
I think you had to do that. I thought that was
Can just let her walk away and then game over.
That's what I did.
Oh, well, I tried to shoot her and nothing happened and then it restarted again.
I tried to shoot her and then I went over and just went to her and it did the whole, it grabbed her.
Yeah.
But when I just had a look back and I didn't realise there's actually another ringdom where you just fail.
Oh yeah, everything just goes. Yeah, because in that there was 3 times in the game where it asks you to, like, it doesn't tell you what to do and it says, oh, just think for yourself. Like, think of a way to cross the lake. Think of a way to get into the beach. Like, think of whatever. And I got the cross the lake one because I ended up triggering a boss fight by accident. And I was like, I can just climb these buildings and that'll work. And the one before that where it was like, figure out a way to teleport to the beach, I didn't think of Fragile at all. I don't know if you guys did. I ended up, eventually Sam says to himself that he can use Fragile to do it.
Right.
Because I was just wandering around in the city going like, well, I don't know your stupid rules, Kojima. I don't know what the hell you want me to do because you've not laid this out. I don't even know how teleporting works, mate. So I've got no idea how this is what I'm supposed to do. Those were the bits where I was just kind of like, I like that he has confidence in his own nomenclature, which he always does in Metal Gears and his own work and stuff. But things like that where I was like, okay, a lot of the world building and terminology kind of falls in on itself. There are rules governing it. But I try the whole thing so seriously that every time he tried, like, you know, okay, well, this term is actually means this, and then actually Dooms means this, and EE is this. And I'm like, okay, I'm like mentally cataloging all this stuff so that in those closing scenes where he inverts everything, and actually this means this all along, and this wasn't real all along. And I'm just like, all these other scenes that I had like stocked up, like, well, that never really happened, and this really happened. It lost me like at the end, until the very end, then it came back again.
I have problems that, like, I don't mind being spoon fed the whole game, but when he would once in a while go, go on then, just do it. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on. Yeah. Like, you think that you'd work it out and you feel so smart, but there'll be just something that you just didn't like. The crossing the lake, I accidentally triggered the boss fight as well, but I died and made a crater, so then I just walked around the giant crater.
That's kind of great, though.
So it made a bridge for me because I died, so I was like, fine, I'm just going
to
do this.
In a way, I quite like that. Like, there are other ways to do it, because in my head, I was like, well, I wonder if there's a bunch of ways that I'm supposed to be figuring out, but then the amount, you can't kill all the BTs at that part of the beach. They just keep coming back, so at some point, you're going to die or figure it out with the boss battle kind of thing.
Me for that bit, I didn't figure it out straight away and I was kind of frustrated. I kept just walking into the tar and dying and I was like, what am I doing wrong? And then I just ended up checking my mail because I was looking for another pizza mission for something else to do. And I was reading through the most recent ones and then they give you a hint like, don't forget that sometimes structures come back when you enter the BT areas. Right. And I was like, that makes sense. But with Fragile, I actually put that together myself and I did feel smart. I felt very satisfied. Yeah. I was put together the lore in my head and realized what I'd done before and went straight for that. And when it rewarded me with the actual answer, I thought, that's very cool. Thank you, Hideo.
It's because it's Fragile, not Fragile.
She says her name like differently like 5 times. And like Lea Seydoux is a great actress. But her lines are really weird in this, like a lot of it. And then the bit where they say it together at the end, like, I'm fragile, but not that fragile. I was like, words I can't say on YouTube. And I just like, stuff like that made me cringe inside out, where I was like, you haven't really earned this and you're not as cool as you think you are. And I think stuff like that is proper Emperor's New Clothes stuff, where like, I can go with it. I love the thing when he meets Hartman, he does a little record scratch. I love Hartman doing the thumbs up and giving you likes and BB and everything else. But then sometimes the lines he tries to nail, like that Fragile line, I think are just like, oh man, actually you think this is way cooler than it is, and it isn't at all.
I agree, but for me, that doesn't bring down the overall sort of satisfaction I have with the conclusion in general. There are a lot of issues with the script, as you would expect from a Hideo Kojima script. Mm-hmm. But for me, this is the only time I've enjoyed one of his stories in a way that's properly gotten me like really emotional. I've always been interested in his stories and worlds and mythology. I've always been fascinated by the way he rolls them out and the way he presents them. Mm-hmm. But even in the later Metal Gear games, I've never felt as shocked emotionally as I have with this, because I feel like in this game, everything from the story to the characters to the gameplay all centers around one core emotional theme. And that might seem like it's a bit basic, but it drives it home so much that by the time I got to the finale, I thought, actually, this might have a lot of pathos to it.
It's weird, because one of the biggest criticisms with it, and I've seen this in a bunch of other outlets as well, is that the opening sentiment it gives you in the first 5 minutes is the exact same thing by the ending 5 minutes, which is just, we need to come together. And like, and it's like, yeah, fine. And the thing that I really like is that he frames that in a human history kind of way. Like when he first starts mentioning the five other extinctions, like they're all real. Like they, you know, there are things that have happened in the past, these big phenomena that resulted in mass extinctions of human history, world history. And that's just really interesting in framing, like, you know, isn't the idea that we can come together at all this massive natural miracle?
Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah,
that's cool, like giving it this, all this context and weight and everything.
That's why I love the Amelie twist towards the end, because when it was revealed that she was the quote unquote bad guy, I kind of rolled my eyes because I was just convinced that she'd be sort of one dimensional. But when they fleshed out why she was doing what she was doing and that she was born as this extinction entity and she sort of rebelled against her, you know, destiny essentially, it ended up causing the Death Stranding. And then she decided that, look, life was a fluke. The Big Bang happened. We shouldn't even be here. And the nature is trying to take its course and fix that through these different extinction events. And it's just not happening because humans are too darn, you know, stubborn and they keep coming back. So I'm gonna finish it. I'm gonna stop the suffering. She just doesn't get why humans, like, you know, continue to forge connections.
It's the Matrix ending.
Yeah, yeah.
Why do you persist
in sight of, you know, utter annihilation that will come eventually, whether it's tomorrow or in 1,000 years time? In the way that was presented towards the end, for me, like you said, it's essentially the same message that you get at the start of the game, but the way they present it and the way they hammer it home and your journey both as a player and as a spectator of the plot, for me, I just thought that was really awesome in a way that Kojima hasn't done before, because he's tackled big philosophical themes in his writing before, but for me they're often convoluted and wordy and so on the nose, and this is on the nose, but it felt, you know, contextualized in the actual plot. It didn't feel sort of, you know, like the plot was just a vehicle for these long monologues. It felt interwoven in a more natural way than I think other games have been.
Even though he did kind of get his vehicle stuff in with Higgs. Higgs was his vehicle to do all that crazy stuff. And Higgs, I feel like if we do carry on, if there is another Stranding, he's going to be like the Ocelot. Because I don't think he's dead. Like, I don't think he killed him. So even though you had the gunshot, he would show that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think the Higgs stuff's really weird because obviously, like, you know, he was called Higgs in the beginning and we said months ago that he must be like the God particle and he's chaos and whatever. And then he literally is that. And he's literally saying that to you over and over again. I am the God particle. I am chaos. And, you know, and literally, like, Fragile takes his mask. I brought you a metaphor. And it's like, okay, yeah. You really want to just hammer this every single part of this home. And that was the sort of stuff where like I said, he kind of wants to have his cake and philosophize about it as well. And that sort of stuff kind of stood out. I do think, because you said about you think that it feels a bit more natural in terms of like the big essay level stuff that he does, that he's kind of been known for ever since the end of Metal Gear Solid 2. I would say that ending stuff where you're running and waiting for the next bit to trigger, that was where it felt really belabored, and I wish that they'd threaded maybe something relating to Amelie's true purpose throughout the rest of it. Because it ends up feeling more like I said, he's struggling with open world design, and he's like, well, I can't give this to the player now because they have 80 hours beforehand, so I'm going to wait, and, like, you know, and then here's the rest of the game, and it all feels like very, like, lumpen and laden.
It was the end credit scene, and towards the end of Crossing America, when you had all these demon jellyfish, and it just really slows you down, and you just want to get to the point, and it's just like these roadblocks. Oh, come on then, fine.
And it's like, it's super simple storytelling to just be like, well, Higgs can do everything, he can create the clouds, he can create the rain and everything else, because Amelie just willed it. And then I'm just like, okay, well, that kind of breaks all the stuff earlier on with, like, she was going along with being the damsel in distress and going on his shoulder when he kidnapped her and being inside that giant boss creature. Mm-hmm. And then when he stabbed her and took her necklace, like, what the hell was all that?
Essentially, it's just for Sam, isn't it? Because she's manipulating him because she needs to do this last stranding. She needs him to be, you know, find her and get to her beach. Mm-hmm. And she can only really do that because he doesn't care about connecting America. He says that over and over again at the beginning. He has to be convinced to go on this job, and for him the main goal, and I actually forgot this because the game, you know, stretches it out over so many hours, I forgot that he doesn't really want to be there connecting things. He's just there to get to the other side of America so he can get to her. So I feel like Higgs is just sort of a means to an end. He is the big bad villain that he keeps referencing himself as sort of the last boss, but he's not. He's just sort of a pawn. But to Sam and the player, I guess he is the end boss. He is the main antagonist that we've been fighting against, and then that rug is pulled from under you.
They also,
and then Amelie gets what she needs.
Yeah, they also do the thing where Kojima gets to like prod his audience right in the eyes. Like, with the first time you fight Higgs, and he's like, oh, is this all you want? Like, you've been waiting for it, right? Like, oh, there's all the slog. Like, I'm a boss fight, so, whatever. And, like, that's the stuff that I really like him for, but I think it's weird ultimately looking back 40 hours later and being like, okay, he was just a joke kind of thing.
It's almost like you forget about the whole point of the mission as well as, like, Sam does. Like, you forget that he's like, oh, stupid baby on my chest sort of thing. And you sort of like, kind of like, you don't just quickly shake Lou. For me, it was more like, I just want to look after this kid.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want it to cry and I want to get through this. And the ending, like, carrying Lou up to the incinerator ruined me quite a bit.
I can't believe you just texted it.
I can't believe you said he finished it.
I can't believe Vader was his father. Oh.
But yeah, that whole thing of like, and the whole point of being like, it really emphasizes like just the loneliness out there. And sure, you're interacting with all these people, but they're all just holograms. Mm-hmm. You never really actually in game ever really see another.
There's some AI
a couple of times.
Oh yeah, some nice guys, which like, here's a thing. Mm. Apart from that, you're just running over some guys in yellow suits and that's about it.
I do think it is at least partly intentional what you said there, where you kind of not forget about the purpose of the mission, but it sort of gets superseded by those connections, because you start at your initial motivation between Sam and the player is to find Amelie. Mm. But then after 10 hours or so, you're enjoying connecting these different areas so much that becomes the focus. And it's sort of, Sam as a character is very frustrating because he doesn't get much sort of direct character development. But I think the way he develops personal relationships is through the player as well, as you come to focus on, you know, just connecting places and doing runs for people and getting to know them through the mail and stuff. And I think that sort of blends into Sam learning to, you know, forge relationships and not be worried about being touched and being alone or all
that. It was weird when he started talking more towards the end. It's like, oh yeah, you actually do speak.
But I disagree with all that stuff, because like the thing is, because the opening gambit, because it's such a cutscene heavy thing, because you spend the first 2 hours like 80% in cutscenes, they really hammer it home that this is your driving force, this is the thing you're going to do, and one of your loved ones is being held hostage, so that's a big immediate plot drive. So for me, that never went away, and that was always the thing that I was going towards. And like, yeah, I can deviate away and deliver some extra packages and make some extra strands, but the Amelie thing was always front and center.
Oh no,
it's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon. Yeah, 100%. Like, that's even with Sam, every single time she sees her in the holograms and stuff. But I think for me, at least, the point is that once you realize what she's been doing, then you sort of look back on your time and you think, actually, what was the point? Like, what was it? Was it to get Amelie, or was it sort of, it's literally right, and I hate to say this because I thought about it, and I love Death Stranding so much, and I love its plot, but Death Stranding's plot is literally the Death Stranding, the real Death Stranding, with a friend you made along the way.
Well, the thing is, like, the whole point, like you just said, is that actually you were doing it for yourself, and she's literally not real. So, literally, they want to hammer that. Even that, they want to hammer home.
For me, after about the 17th Die Hard Man monologue, I kind of forgot what was going on. And, like, you just find yourself building the roads to help connect and think. Mm. And after you get into that loop so much, then you're like, oh, wait a minute, now I'm going to go with Dead Man for a bit. Mm-hmm. And then you're stuck in this whole mama stuff, and I just forgot the greater plot for a while.
Because for me, it's the opposite. I'm trying to catalog every single thing along the way. But that's the thing. It works better if you're not trying to tot everything up. Because as things were unfolding, she was never real. And I'm like, well, what about the Higgs cutscene? What about this other thing? Like, it's easier to roll in the moment. That's the kind of thing that he's going for.
Yeah, and I think this is sort of just a big division in storytelling in general. Because I do agree that if you were compartmentalizing everything and you were reading all of the mail and all of the journals, exactly, in keeping up with the law, that's not the wrong way to view it at all. Mm-hmm. But the game encourages that. Mm-hmm. But to me, the main through line of the story is sort of, it's built on emotional storytelling where it does have all of the lore and all of the intricate sort of details. But in the end, all of that is secondary to the emotional point that Kojima wants to make. And if things don't add up, for me, that's fine, because the end point that he is making makes sense and resonates. But if you are trying to keep track of everything, that is just a complete headache.
Well, that's the thing, right? And it does work in terms of she wasn't real. So the whole point was, like you said, the Death Stranding, the chiral network you made along the way. And it's like, and that's great. And he literally, in the BBC documentary, talked about he wants people to take these life lessons and move, take them forward outside the game. And holistically, it totally makes sense. But I think that the both elements of this game, the open world stuff, the connectivity, the building the world together, is diametrically opposed with sit down and watch this cutscene.
Yes.
And I think that they clash so hard that it makes the ending such a mess.
It was
playing
the game to earn it. And that's what I was kind of doing at the start, but towards the end the loop just becomes so good. I got into the loop so much, and it's 2-hour cutscene, 5 hours of walking around. But it shouldn't have worked, but for me it did.
Right. Because the visual that I love, I love any sort of, anything Blade Runner, any sort of climactic act where a character talks to God or talks to their creator, and what would you ask your creator and things like that. And so I love the scene when he becomes face-to-face with Amelie, and the solution to all the problems is, hey, what if you just gave your evil thoughts a hug? It's so beautifully simplistic, but also kind of on the nose ridiculous. And it works in the moment, especially with the visuals of the whole universe collapsing behind her and everything. And so I really like that stuff, but I think that it's weird. It works if you take a step back and you go and kind of line up all the plot points. And I don't know, it's like in the moment, it just didn't necessarily work for me. The visual of her being hugged and the reality of that kind of worked. But for the longest time for the game, for me, I was like, okay, he's trying to get his family back together and whatever. And I feel like the game's overall runtime got in the way of some of the messaging.
I think whereas most games feel like they're always trying to be cinematic experiences, this is more like a season of TV. Mm. It's more like you consumed a whole season because you get Clifford Unger at little bits, but you always meant to remember he's there, but not thinking, but wait a minute, how does World War I play into the fact that I just delivered a pizza?
Well, I was constantly thinking that.
But certain moments the Higgs forcing Fragile to walk into the rain, that would wipe out, say, the past things for me. And then I was now thinking about that. Mm-hmm. And I'd go forward to then think compartmentalizing each bit. Mm-hmm. And I think this storytelling for me, it felt like it was trying to be a season of TV rather than what games have inspired to be, just a film.
Yeah.
This whole point.
I mean, especially like I said, towards the end, it is like one big season finale. Like, yes. Here's your massive info dump. But that stuff, like, we can talk about Sam and Lou, because like it's weird. It's this is something that I'll take like total responsibility for in terms of assumptions based on open world storytelling. When a character suddenly brings something in, I don't get it. I assume that I missed something, that I should have been somewhere. Like, what the first time Sam wakes up and BB's not there, and he goes Lou, and it's like with a question mark, and I was like, oh, did I just miss like a whole? Is that I just assumed I missed something. Mm-hmm. And I think I messaged Benroy, and I was like, Lou, like what the hell? Like, I honestly just thought I'd missed something. And then it's like, no, that's just the way he writes it. Because then later on, you know, Dead Man just tells him who that is.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make any sense even then. But like, you know, like things like that, where I'm like the connection between Sam and Lou, I don't think is done that well, even though the visuals work.
Ooh.
And the imagery at the end works.
I will agree that bit where he first says Lou is quite
like jarring.
It is quite jarring, but I feel like his connection to that big babby is nicely woven throughout the entire thing, especially when you get to the Dead Man stuff and you see how much Sam actually cares about this companion. Right. And then, you know, he's not just a tool, he's a thing. And then when you find out that he cares so much, not only because, you know, it's an actual child and you obviously care about actual children, but because but there is a connection to the child that he lost, who was called Louise, which is where the name comes from, is for me, I love that little reveal towards the end that he did have, because you forget that Sam has a family and that it ended in such tragedy, and that to me explained enough why he had such a personal connection to this bridge baby.
And I feel like, sorry, we didn't get that initial cutscene like now you love Lou, because it was like you, the player, were getting to love Lou anyway, so it just happened. And then, like, it might be jarring for some people in Death Note, which is like, oh, more stuff, World War II. Yeah. But, like, for me, it was like I was already invested in Lou at the time. Mm-hmm. Sure, I was a bit like, okay, well, that's her name. But then, like, everything else just sort of melded together.
Because did you leave the speaker on your controller so you could always hear them crying?
Yeah.
Right, I eventually turned mine off. Well, I have mine off by default, so I didn't. And I turned it back on. I was like, oh, they're going to cry every single time I'm near anything. Like, no, I'm turning this back off again. And so, like, yeah, the bit when they start trying to humanize it. I did go with it in terms of, like, a base level of human, like, you know, interaction with another little infant. I want to take care of it. But, yeah, the bit when the shift happens to, like, oh, no, one of those obvious arcs where, like, oh, yeah, now he cares about the baby. Mm-hmm. They literally just tell you, like, it's just, like, Dead Man's like, well, this is why you care. And Sam's like, well, yeah, I do care because I used to have a family. None of this was threaded or hinted at before.
Ah, I disagree. I think from the very sort of, as soon as Sam gets Lou, I think it's very obvious, like, he cares about it, at least in my opinion. Like, he talks about it even when Dead Man right at the very beginning is calling it a piece of equipment. Even back then in the early hours, Sam is saying
he doesn't
want
to burn it.
No, like he's like no, it's not just a piece of equipment,
not
like,
in the way that a grieving father would.
Also, when you lose Lou for that chapter, I just wanted to smash through that and get it back. I wasn't gonna do anything else but story, because I wanted Lou back.
Well, there's that great moment where Dead Man's sort of saying, look, there's a problem with Lou, and if we take her away, she is going to lose all of her memories and not have the connection with you. And I thought that was genuinely upsetting when she comes back and she doesn't notice you and she goes straight to Dead Man. I was like, whew, that's an emotional gut punch, my friend.
For me, that bit was just it was just so messy. Like, I couldn't go with that at all. I don't want to derail that, because that's a lovely point that worked as awesome. I wish that did for me. That was weird because he talks so much about, like, oh, we have to reboot it in software and it's not going to remember you and whatever, but then they don't do anything with it. And once he gets them back, there's that one scene where it looks up a Dead Man instead. But then after that, it's business as usual.
Because the feelings broke through and proved it was more than equipment. That's what it's meant to be.
That's definitely what the point of it's meant to be.
Because you were all like corkboarding up there and it's like, Kojima's like, just hearts, love.
Just go with it. It's like, you know, it just waves at you or whatever else.
That's kind of what I got from it as well. Like, when you get Lou back for the second time and she initially doesn't know you, there's sort of the assumption that, or at least the implication of the game, that she just sort of attaches to the first person she sees, like that infancy sort of, you know, attachment,
like
thing.
Imprinting.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And you think that might be what she is, but then she proves herself as being, like, actually human and forging the connections that, even though she's been reset, she still has that bond with Sam eventually. You know, it always comes through.
Mm-hmm. Which is obviously like a really lovely sentiment. I just think it's just weird. So there's something about the way that he writes games, especially like Phantom Pain and this, that I think have this weird, like, ethereal quality to them, where everyone is kind of disconnected. Everyone is their own motivations and they don't necessarily feel very human. You know, they monologue about why they're called what they're called. And, like, you know, someone like Sam, when all's told about him and what he really went through and everything, I'm like, well, it's just strange. He plays it off as like, well, Sam's disconnected and America's effed, so, like, I'm not bothered. But then that also is assumedly why he doesn't talk about anything relating to himself until the script wants you to know, which then it works more as a surprise than things that he maybe could have said earlier on or whatever. And I find that mounts up to a level of unbelievability or suspension of disbelief that gets in the way for me in terms of buying the overall emotional moments, because I don't feel like they're as earned.
It's weird because it feels just like Norman Reedus after watching like 1,000 episodes of The Walking Dead. But then like I feel like it does kind of work, because I don't want to be like, oh, Kojima wants you to feel. I feel like it's that he's meant to just be a bit soulless and just quiet because you are him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he wants his big friend from Hollywood to be in this, but you're just being that big friend from Hollywood.
Yeah. He also wants you to be like be an avatar and just, you know, and be the delivery person and be kind of completely disconnected. And that's it's so obvious what he's going for in terms of like he's gonna learn to feel over time. And I'm like, yeah, totally. Like that's like, but like I said, they hammer it home. They tell you when those moments come. Like, you know, they literally like he literally says, like, you know, like, no, it's not equipment, it's a baby. And I'm like, mm-hmm. yeah, okay, like, oh, you got there like 20 hours in. Like, it didn't feel natural. It felt like that's the thing that he wrote at that point in time. Because we need that shift to happen. Now it's called glue.
It does feel like
whatever.
Everyone in this game was business first, and there was like no like, oh, let's just sit down and look at this monkey smoking or something like that.
But it's like, for as much as the whole thing is this giant sort of extrapolation of human chemistry and the need to be together and community and companionship and everything, there's not really a human element to the script. It's all very like very synthetic and very like, you know, all characters are labeled as cargo, and it's all very purposeful. It's all very like utilitarian. It's like,
yeah.
You know, what is your utility? What is your purpose?
I think that is, sorry, Ben, I got.
I was just saying, is it distillation of the fact that all the human elements have become just like cargo?
He would obviously say so, yeah.
The crying, like we would cry, but crying in this game is a chemical reaction to like teleporting. So it's all forced.
Mm-hmm.
All the human elements now are just gone, and they're not natural. They're all forced by some sort of aspect.
Yeah, I'd agree with Benroy, to be fair. And I think it's when you look at these characters in the game and you dig into them, then you do find that they aren't just cargo. You know what I mean? They are still, despite everything, despite the fact that a Death Stranding has happened and the world is doomed, that they're still human. It's still the connections that sort of define them. Like Mama's connection to a child and her sister, Dead Man's connection, not Dead Man, Die Hard Man's connection to, you know, his two mentor figures and Bridget and Cliff. Everyone has sort of these really deeply, for me, deeply human elements that have been hidden or sort of pushed apart as America itself has sort of come apart. Mm. And again, it's a big sledgehammer metaphor, but I would disagree saying that it doesn't have that human element in the script, because I think, if anything, it has too much of it, because he's just goes all in on it over and over again.
It's like nuanced ways of dissecting what I mean by that. I think it's, which is like a whole wider conversation, but I think there's like some character interactions have warmth. The time that you first meet up with Mama, it feels like an actual person is talking to you. Whereas like when you talk to Dead Man or Die Hard Man or Fragile, you're getting barely any fractions of what an actual human being would be like. And that's maybe a reflection on how much he wants you to feel that disparate sort of disconnect from what society is right now, like in our timeline right now, as opposed to this sort of weird post-apocalyptic thing. But for me, all that stuff mounted up to being like a weird sense of things just kind of feeling jarring, which like kind of got in the way of, then he's when he starts laboring everything else on about extinction entities and God and whatever else.
I never thought Die Hardman would be an actual human character in this, and then the last 2 hours, some of the best acting in the game.
Some of the best acting in any video game ever.
Yeah.
Like, easily. That scene was weird, though, because I don't mean to be so negative either. I really, like, love the game. I just have these weird problems with the script, which for me, like, are the linchpin for so much of it. And for me, they kind of get in the way. That Die Hardman scene, though, when that was happening, when he was really going for it, and he starts snotting everywhere, and I'm like, you're getting, like, proper upset.
Yeah.
In the moment, I was like, did I miss why you're this upset? Like, I know what you did, but, dude.
I bloody love that, man. I love it so much. I think the acting is great, and I do think it's justified, because obviously, you know, he kept getting saved by Cliff when he was in his military group, but he also loved Bridget. Like, he loved both of them, and then she forced him to kill not only, you know, his other mentor figure, but also a little child. And then I love the fact that he's crying because, you know, Cliff has finally come for him. He's finally come for his revenge. Mm-hmm. He's been waiting for the moment where, you know, he atones for his sins. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't get that satisfaction. He doesn't get the finality of death. He's got to continue on living in this world and trying to make it better. And that's the hard part. You know what I mean? It would be easy for him to just have Cliff kill him and have all be forgiven or at least justified, but instead he's got to continue living with the guilt. He's got to try to make America better. He's now the president. He's got all of those emotions and he hasn't had a connection with someone. He hasn't been able to reveal this in years, and now Sam knows.
But it's also weird, just thinking about seeing, for most of the game, you see Clifford Unger through the perspective of Lou, BB, or whatever you'd like to call the baby in the jar. But I feel like towards
little
the end
jewels.
The game tricked me into thinking that he was my dad because like I was always looking at him from this kid's perspective up like this. Uh-huh. And then when you knew he was going to get offed, I didn't want it to happen. I didn't want to see it when you felt, oh, he's going to get out. No, he's not getting out. Oh, where are you going? Why do we only have this one corridor rendered?
Yeah. I think it's weird that on both points, like for me, they don't do anywhere near enough in the script. The way you just described like Dai Hardman's motivations and why he has that massive breakdown scene at the end, if they'd done way more with his relationship with Bridget, and if they'd done way more with his agency throughout the whole game in terms of giving him this presence instead of him just being a hologram, like, you know, five or six times, then that final scene would easily go down in gaming history as one of the greatest pieces of acting ever. And it's still going to be in terms of pure motion capture. But
the problem is he's just literally hiding behind that mask and he's trying to hide himself the whole game.
It's so difficult. Threadbare, though. You pick so much out of it, but it's like there's nothing in the script.
See, I would disagree, but I would disagree, but also agree. I disagree that it's threadbare because I do think it's all there in the actual text and storytelling. But the problem, I think, goes back to what we said at the very start of this video, in that because it is so spread out, I do think you get a real sense of his connection with Bridget in the first 2 hours. But
I didn't know he was in love.
By the time you're... Right.
At all.
Right. By the time you're, say, 40 hours in, he is just that guy on the hologram, and then you get another dump towards the end. For me, it's not a problem with the story. It's a problem with the storytelling, I guess, or the pacing.
Well, that would be kind of that's one of those like nuanced things of just like I'm literally talking about like dialogue exchanges and you know like certain pieces of like acting chemistry and things like that. In terms of actual like beat for beat storytelling, I think it's brilliant. It's just that I think the actual exchanges you have when he then goes like full emotional with something like that, where I'm just kind of like, you've not really built up to this or anything. And like maybe it works because it is so disparate and it is this sort of highlighting of emotion in this world so devoid of it that it can work even more. But like for me, it got in the way. I don't know if it was the same. Were you a fan of the Dai Hardman breakdown?
Yes, because I didn't really see it coming, but then when it happened, I was like, oh God, this is going through, and I didn't really pick up the Bridget stuff towards the end, but I was thinking, well, my Metal Gear brain was thinking that he loves him because he's like love blooms on the battlefield, so he loves Clifford Unger for saving him all this time, and the guilt of him being like responsible for pretty much this death and like everything that's happening.
I think all that comes in the last, like,
him trying
hours.
To hide behind his mask the whole time. But, I mean, that's why it kind of works, because he was nothing more than just a quest giver for basically the whole game.
Yeah.
And someone decent in the cutscene at the beginning with a cool mask. A ridiculous mask.
Which was Bridget's first, because why not? Yeah.
And then she doesn't wear it, and then she does wear it. But for me, I didn't think Dai Hardman would be my favorite character.
Mine's
one of
Mama.
Them.
But
Mine's probably Big Mads.
Nice. But, Mads is great.
But... It was like he was bottom of the list and up to the top towards the end.
Yeah, and again, I think that is sort of kind of intentional with what we were talking about earlier, with that everyone is sort of so dehumanized at the beginning. They haven't even got the real names that they're hidden. But then when you dig under the surface of everyone, they've all got these really tragic human feelings that they're feeling. They just haven't been able to express them or connect. And I do like that out of nowhere, Dai Hardman, the lamest dude in the story up until that point, has the biggest emotional breakdown, and you're like, oh yeah, he was human after all, wasn't he?
I think it's probably totally subjective, but I think if you're going to rush that level, like considering the overall runtime, we're averaging about 50 hours. If you crunch a lot of the review data and you crunch what we finished it about 40 hours each, I think.
Benji did it in about 30.
Yeah, he just went main mission. And if you crunch that across like 50 hours runtime, you have a big old chunk of storytelling at the beginning and a big old storytelling chunk at the end. When there's so much time and space for that, you could have done all this stuff way more naturally and in a way that would have led up to these big moments at the end. And I think the Amelie one lands because you're more in touch with her throughout the whole thing, and her overall role ties into the fact that you're building America over time. The Dai Hardman stuff, I just found to be weirdly not overacted, because it works, and Tommy L. Jones is an incredible actor, but like, yeah, that stuff was just, there's a lot of stuff where I'm just like, yeah, I don't, this is just coming at me, just all these scenes sort of coming at me.
I almost feel like he should have got the nod over Norman Reedus for
best for the Video Game Awards,
best like performer. Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't think Norman Reedus's performance in this is anything, to be honest. Like there's a bit where he breaks down once. But it's not anything compared to
other people. It's
all right. It's Norman Reedus.
Whereas like Mads getting nominated is there's a lot more to him, and I think his presence is way stronger. I had one final question, unless either of you guys want to raise anything in particular. maybe not.
I think I would have liked to just see how Higgs scurried away, like meh, in like a little in like a little pizza costume outfit.
Oh, if they cut him in a box and he was walking away in a Metal Gear box, I probably would have loved him. Yeah. I mean, I love him anyway.
Something like that, because I just want to express how great I feel like the whole Higgs stuff went, because I was expecting, oh, it just keeps appearing and going away. Are they just going to do this? And then, no, he's in the giant BT. Sorry, BD, because of Star Wars.
Yes.
BT, and then you've thrown boxes at him, and I was like, oh, God, you're going to make me throw suitcases at him for about 20 minutes. Yes. And then you have the punch-up, and then
it becomes Metal Gear
I was really bad at the blocking, when he gets his combinations, you just beat him. And then you get another like long cutscene forever.
Mm-hmm.
I think he just chews it up so much, and Troy Baker is fantastic. And I just
plus after you do all that stuff, you get access to his journal, and then you can go to his bunker. And
I've
you can
still not gone there yet, but I can't wait.
I have. Like I think for him, like, he's meant to be chaos, and it's like it's playing in this wider realm of like certain like celestial entities and what do they want, and whoever Higgs is. Well, Higgs is meant to represent like pure chaos, but also he's also a cipher for video game violence and that initial rush and not wanting to go down. You know, he literally references it, like I said, in that first boss battle, which makes him the weirdest non-character ever. But he also serves such a specific purpose. It's just weird. It's such a mishmash of ideas. But, like, I mean, overall, you guys are... I mean, it's weird. I have a lot of problems with the script, but I'm overall positive on it. In the moment when I hugged Emily and the credits were rolling, I had a big feeling of genuine positivity. And I was like, I'm so glad I went through this.
Yeah.
I think are both you guys more positive than me on the storytelling and script overall? Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I feel like Control, I loved, but then this was an experience that I will remember, this game.
Mm-hmm.
This took a part of me because 50 hours or so.
It was a long thing. Where were you for Game of the Year stuff? I think, Josh, it's right up there for you.
It is my Game of the Year. Nice. I wasn't sure at first, but I haven't had a game that I've just wanted to live and breathe like this. I usually play games for a long time, but it takes me a long time to get to a high hour count, whereas this, I finished in 6 days and played 50 hours of it. I just lived, breathed, slept the game. And even when I was at work, I was thinking about what I was going to do at the night. And for me, that on top of a story that actually really emotionally got me, it does have its problems, but it's great.
Yeah,
I booked a day off for this game today as well.
Yeah,
I don't think I would have been able to cope if I didn't book that day off.
Really?
I needed this game. I needed to play it. I needed to go through it and thinking about it like you was. And then when it took over the office and more people that played than we thought they would were playing it, and it was just it was the perfect loop, like Phantom Pain was almost, but with a more compelling story to me. And it just got in your brain and dug in and wasn't going away until you finished it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to go back to it. It's Game of the Year for me.
Yeah, I think Sekiro's Game of the Year, but it's number 2. Lols. Just because you couldn't beat the thing, but it's still pretty good. I think in terms of Death Stranding, though, the amount of... like the amount of stuff that he tries to do, the amount of things that kind of like go sideways or whatever. But I'm glad that it exists. I'm glad that something this unique would have this much money behind it, and this many people seem to have played it, and the sales are insane for it as well. But yeah, I mean, one of the last question I had, which you can have a yes or a no, is Hideo Kojima a genius?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, sure, man. Yeah.
I will say yes.
He's different and fresh, so yes.
Yes. I like the fact that at least he's tried something that like no other developer has done, especially this year, especially this generation. But yeah, let us know what you think down in the comments below if you're following along on the video side of things, or come find us on social media if you're listening on the audio platforms. For now, though, Ivan Scott from WhatCulture.com. This has been the WhatCulture Gaming Podcast. That was the wrong outro, but it doesn't matter because I'm joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Goodbye.
I'm Josh Brown.
See ya.
And we'll catch you next time. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.